The Golden Tree Guild continues to find itself underground in a dark, wet, smelly, terrible cavern. You guys have successfully slain your foe, and, well, now you guys are, waiting. Because, unfortunately, two of you can't breathe air right now or be exposed to it in any way without taking large amounts of damage. So, ripe for adventure is, I guess, where you guys find yourselves. Kaskarin and Val, I imagine, are floating somewhere underneath the water, maybe occasionally bobbing up to talk to their guilders. Checkers has returned to his right mind and is no longer in the thrall of this horrible creature. And Selv has climbed up a rope and has found the exact people that I'm sure you all were hoping to see and hear from, the Verdant Wave Adventuring Guild. Selv, you were told by the Verdant Wave, like, you just stay here, we'll handle it. And so you and the three guilders and recently resummoned Mangos find yourselves alone, waiting for probably the lamest rescue of all time.
So Checkers is hiding inside the wicker basket that contained the bones of Saint Stillwater. And he is doing this because he is waiting for the Verdant Wave to get back so he can spook them when they get here.
Naturally,
yes. Pop out. And every, like, 30 seconds, he's like, Sal, are they back? Sal, I can't see anything. Sal, are they back?
No, they're not back yet, Checkers.
Sal, are they back yet?
Not yet, Checkers.
Sal, I'm bored.
why don't you take a little nap there, Checkers?
But I'm not tired yet. Maybe a bedtime story will help. You've been gone for a while, haven't you, Selv?
Yeah, I was at the tournament.
Did someone say tournament?
Yeah, Cass, he said tournament. I mean...
Yes, Cass, I was talking about the tournament.
Well, you can't just leave it at that, Selv.
I suppose we have some time to kill, so when I left a couple weeks ago...
Several days ago, Selv, during the midst of essentially what was the guilder equivalent of summer break, you were relaxing, you were filling your time. Where does a missive find you? What is it that you're doing on your kind of like no obligations, chill day?
I think Selv is relaxing in the hot spring. Maybe after his practice in the yard with either the training or... down at the barracks with some of the other soldiers, just some of that little combat practicing. Stay loose. He's back at the guild hall and just lounging in some nice, steamy, warm water.
Selv, you are relaxing. You hear the sounds of Agmar. You feel the sloshing of water. You, in the distance, just pick up the faint braying of a baby donkey and smell the acrid smoke emitting from Etrus's shack. All of the wonderful sensations of home. When suddenly, an extraordinarily square, extraordinarily teary-eyed dwarf child appears out of nowhere, right next to you, offering you something.
Excuse me, sir. Are you Selv Asterlin?
Oh, sorry, I... didn't see you there.
It's okay.
Yes, I am.
Some scary looking man paid me 2 coppers to give this to you.
Oh.
I'll reach out my hand for whatever this thing is.
It is a scroll. Full on, like, sealed with wax scroll that has your name written on it.
Thank you. Just a moment.
And I will go to the edge of the water there and into one of my pouches and fish out like another silver piece and toss it over to the dwarf child.
Oh, thank you. And the small square dwarf child begins to trundle off and says, Mom, I did it. And you hear another woman just congratulating her small child profusely.
Well done, James. Good job. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you, Mom.
That's... David mimed, like, being hugged, and I just imagine a tiny dwarf child being, like, fully engulfed by, like, a dwarf
big
mom,
time.
And it warms my heart.
Yes. Again, you
James
can't see any of it,
that
but...
Hug.
That's adorable.
And then I will open up the scroll and see what it says.
You look at this scroll as you're kind of, you know, finding where the wax seal is, that sort of thing. The seal itself is a stylized flame. Very simple, but there with a bright red wax. And your name is spelled out, Selv Astralin. But unfortunately, it includes an extra S. Astralin.
I already know who this is from.
I will somewhat not stoically break the seal.
You give it a little extra mustard
a little,
than you need to.
Yeah, and maybe the extra S part of the wax just kind of like falls to the ground.
Oops.
Somewhere and gets stepped on.
You unscroll it, and it is, again, it is a classic, like, announcement scroll in your mind, you know, in your mind's eye that you could picture. And you open it, and it has 9 words. You read it, and it says, It is time. Cart leaves mid-afternoon. Northwest gate. No signature, nothing.
None needed. All right, based on time now, how much time do I have?
You have about 20 minutes.
Perfect.
It is early mid-afternoon, maybe middle mid-afternoon.
So the delivery method and delivery person were selected specifically to give me the least amount of time.
Who's to say?
He told
Who's
me to wait 3 days. And,
and you did such a good job being patient, James.
Thanks,
I'm so
Mommy.
Proud of you.
That was a wonderful, wonderful job.
Let's go to Torts and Ports to celebrate.
He gave me a whole silver.
And you will buy the finest ale there.
Mom, I'm two. I can't drink.
You're a dwarf.
You should have been drinking 6 months ago, boy. All right, then I will kind of put my hands on the edge of the water there and just launch myself up and head inside, and knowing that this thing could come at any moment, because that's what I was told, Self has a little go bag.
Yep.
And where he's got all of his stuff packed, he just runs in, grabs it, stop by Burga real quick, and just say,
I've been summoned to the tournament. I'll be gone for a few days. Send a sending if anything comes up that needs my attention.
She nods and she, you know, her face lights up. Maybe you've told her about the tournament already so that she was kind of prepared.
Yes, everybody has to be prepared because I knew this would come at any moment.
And she goes to start talking and you hear,
Oh, yes. We will make sure all of your belongings are well cared for while you are gone.
Selv is going to attempt to throw off Taroth a little bit.
The imp seated on Berga's chair, again, just kind of rubbing his hands together. And Berga doesn't even respond. She just puts her hand right between her eyes and rubs her breast. Just
and I'm going to look directly at Taroth and say,
Thank you, Taroth. I appreciate it. And I know that everything will be well kept with your watchful eye. Again, thank you.
And I'll give him a little bow. And then I spin around and I'm out the door.
Wait, you want me to do what? What?
And then trailing off just a little bit, you hear.
As you turn around, you hear a final call out from Berga, who says, Don't forget to bring your sidekick. Because the two of you have talked about it. And everyone thought that it might be a nice opportunity, now that she's a little grown, for Hody to go back on the road once more and give you a little bit of company as you are off on your tournament. Get to see the sights. It's good to kind of make sure that your magical donkey is is well socialized, you know, mm-hmm. gets to see a lot of different places, situations, and, you know, she's got to be on the move, got to see the world. And so already packed up, you see Hody is just standing by the door as you exit with just a bag of things, looking expectantly up at you.
Can I pitch that Hody and Colaprico are inseparable? So that it's Hody and then Colaprico the chicken just sitting on the saddle?
I think my instinct was to be like, well, obviously they need to be separated so that they don't get separation anxiety.
But they can't have separation anxiety if they're never separated.
And I think you are 100% correct. So atop of Hody's head is Colaprico, the exceptionally bred fighting chicken.
I have a question.
Yes.
What does Hody's nubbin stubs look like?
Hody sits there in front of you. And, God, she is fuzzier, more velvety than ever. Her eyes somehow just like a doll's beautiful eyes. And I don't mean that in the Jaws sense. I mean that in the, like, picturesque. The gleam perfectly hits her eye from the sun at all times and at all angles. And, God, if she doesn't sleep cuter now than she did when she was an even wee baby. But she has grown a little bit. She's filled out. She's looking a little bit slightly more donkey-sized, even though she is babby-sized. You guys have kind of wondered if she's never actually going to grow to be full donkey-sized. Maybe she's a runt. Maybe her various, we'll say, physiological experiences take a little bit of her density and put it elsewhere. But unfortunately, her nubbins are bigger, which, you know, okay, you were ready for that. But they wiggle now. And that, and it's still, a little off-putting.
Still not sure, wings versus spider legs?
No, but it's like 3 or 4 inches of just like nub now. And they just wiggle like as if when she's like happy, you know? They waggle around a little bit.
Why would you do this, Nathan?
And
don't, just
when she said...
fuzzy. They're fuzzy.
They are fuzzy, absolutely. They're still covered with fur.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, when deer, when they grow their antlers and they still have like weird fuzz on them. It's like that. But man... She is sitting there looking up at Selv. She knows. She knows. And her little nubbins are just flapping and or crawling around.
So Selv will jog up to Hody and Colaprico and give a little headbutt greeting to Hody, like bump foreheads. And then for Colaprico, Selv will hold out his fist and get the little wing bump on his fist.
Okay. I hope you're ready to run. We gotta make up a little bit of time.
Hody jumps and she's like on all fours, ready for action.
Does Hody already have a harness or something like a leash or anything? Where I
she
to,
has
like...
a leash, yeah.
Okay.
And it is specifically, it is a, like one that goes around your,
okay,
your whole
torso.
Okay,
I was thinking like cross, it's like, yeah, crosswise, yeah.
So it goes on both of your torsos. So like it goes around your waist and then connects to a full body donkey harness that she has and somehow already has on for some reason.
Okay. Then I will take the loops, put them over my shoulder of the leash for Hody, and then just say,
all right, ready? 1, 2, 3, let's go.
And I'll take off and I will either slow my pace to Hody's or... be trying to keep up with her.
Hody keeps pace. Like, it's, okay. You don't have to speed up or slow down, but like, Hody can haul ass, it turns out. And she is.
That's funny.
Damn it. But yes, she is hauling herself an ass just as quickly as you are and clearly having a great time as she does it. You guys cut through the city. Luckily, you guys are already on the northwest side of the city as it is. You guys run for a few minutes and find yourselves again at the Northwest Gate. This is probably the gate that you guys have exited from a great many times. And there, in front of you, is a small caravan, actually. There are quite a few people who, for whatever reason, are gearing up to go this way. And included in there is a cart that is pulled by a couple of fantastical beasts of burden. And sitting atop it is Kavos Pyrelighter, the member of the Verdant Wave Adventuring Guild, Red Dragonborn. And he looks over at you and says,
ah, Asterlin, I thought you were going to mit.
And he looks down at the two creatures accompanying you, who are breathing heavily, but thrilled to be there. What is that?
Oh, my apologies. Hody, Kavos, Kavos, Hody, Calabrico, Kavos, Kavos, Calabrico. They wanted to come with.
It's very kind of you to have brought snacks for the road.
Self will actually go into a pack that Hody is carrying. And,
oh my god, she has tiny little saddlebags.
Yeah, she
oh,
does.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Of course she does.
And take out a little trail mix that Val has prepared and just say,
oh, of course,
and toss that to Kavos.
The question is it labeled for Kavos?
I want it to be, but I don't.
It would take convincing, but Val would do it if Self asked.
It's for inter-guild relations.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. She's mad about it, but she did it.
There is one for Kavos because Self knew Kavos was going to be there. And then there are a couple that are labeled like miscellaneous spicy, miscellaneous mild, you know, just in case there's other people that Self wasn't sure.
Well, and you can't like... Val did make a perfect combo for you, but like even perfect combinations can get old after a while. You want something new,
of course.
Like, sure. Road for
and there's also
days.
There's also some that have electrolytes in it,
yeah.
And some mm-hmm. for quick energy, some
right.
that are protein heavy.
He's going to a fighting tournament. He needs that quick energy and yep. recovery.
And they're all labeled.
Oh, of course.
Like this is like eat this after tournament one, eat this after tournament two.
Who do you think Val is?
Yeah, exactly.
Kavos looks down at these just disgusting creatures, you included, and says, we're leaving. And he turns and does one of the mush things with the reins and the cart, and the rest of the group start to move off following his lead.
Is the cart basically sized for just Kavos?
No.
Or are there other people in it? Or, you know,
it seems to be just Kavos. And so you see like a small knapsack of things in the back, and then nothing else.
So everybody else is walking or has their
or
own...
has their own modes of transportation, okay. That sort of thing.
All right. I will start off walking and then probably jump in the cart a little bit later.
I was going to say, that's very nice of you to think that you can get in the cart.
It is a couple days on your journey. You know that you are actually headed on the Runic Road once more. This is the first time you guys have been on the Runic Road for a little while. And this appears to be yet another just stretch of decently well-maintained Runic Road. As a reminder to reset the scene. The Runic Road, built by the Pentarchy to ensure safe travel. You see each brick alongside it is individually stamped with a rune. And it stretches as far as the eye can see and offers an amount of magical protection for all those who are walking on it. It's gone into a little bit of disrepair over the years, in part because no one knows how to take care of it. And also technically it's no one's responsibility to take care of it, but it still offers pretty good protection, certainly for the masses who are traveling, such as yourself. And you know that this road leads you straight to the Mountains of Fire. Steve.
Yes.
What is something interesting that happens to you or the group as you're traveling?
There is a kind of a tradition for folks on the Runic Road that are traveling together for any kind of length of time. And it's kind of like almost like a call and response type of thing where it's, you know, the kids' songs like, who stole the cookie from the cookie jar? You know, so-and-so did. Who, me? Yeah, you know.
I love that that's the example that you came up with. It's very specific.
It's yeah. kind of like camp songs.
Yeah, camp songs. And so this is to just kind of get to know the people that you are traveling with and find out not necessarily who they are, but more of like, you know, how far are they going on the Runic Road? Where are they going? Where are they from? That kind of stuff. And so one night, Selv kicks it off, and he just starts kind of like setting a beat on a rock that he's sitting on. So just kind of...
Runic Road, take me home to the place I belong. Bingjuzi Monastery, Runic Road. Take me home.
And then it goes to the next person.
And most people are from Agmar, which doesn't fit quite as nicely into the rhyming scheme, but, you know, everyone's kind of found their way around it.
The Bing Zhuzi Monastery just kind of fit really well in there.
The people know that's actually where the song started. It was the monastery because it fits so well. But you do hear from a couple other places. Certainly there's someone from Karasta, which is a little bit east of you guys, further down, some other small towns that kind of exist, but are kind of from all over, but happily kind of take part in the ritual. And Kavos does not sing.
I didn't think so.
But Hody does wiggle her nubs very excitedly. So it really makes up for it in the kind of grand scheme of things. David, what is something that happens to this merry band of travelers? Or maybe not so merry. Kavos really brings down the kind of like merriness maximum ceiling of travelers. But what is something that happens on this few days of journey on the Runic Road?
A tragic accident befalls Kavos.
The following day, the following morning, the caravan is making good progress up the road. And Selv, you have this kind of notebook in your hand that you're going through as I, David, am making character decisions for you. And
I'm here for it.
Mm-hmm. It reads, 7 a.m., put finger in wind and check temperature, which you do. And you realize that it's a little too cold for Hody. And so the instructions say, if temperature below this, open pouch 62. And so you go there like your little choose your own adventure book. You open up pouch 62. And inside are two sweaters that have been lovingly hand knitted, one for Colaprico and one for Hody. And the one for Hody is like a full snood where it like, you know, wraps Hody's entire body, torso, and the arms go all the way down to her hooves. It has a little bit on her little swishy tail, and then has little cutouts for her nubbins so they can, you know, still move and emote.
Wiggle appropriately.
Yeah. And then there's just a little hood with the little ears cut out just to keep a little head warm.
A hoodie on Hody?
Yeah. And it very much has that like ugly sweater look where there's just like stripes all over the place. And in front, or I guess like on the side somewhere.
Yeah, like on the flank where it's visible.
Yeah, mm-hmm. On the flank. You can see that there are three little smiling frogs, one next to each other.
And behind each of them, I'm also imagining there's the golden tree badge symbol, symbol behind each of them.
I also would like to offer a suggestion is that parts of it are colors that do not exist in nature so that she cannot be misidentified as something to be like hunted or shot or
you know,
like,
wearing,
like hunters wearing yellow.
She's
and
wearing
kind of
a bright orange. Yeah, it doesn't go well with the green of the frog, but it is high vis.
Yes. And Colaprico has a similar sweater knit for them. That only has one frog, but still extremely cozy.
Colaprico fucking hates putting on the sweater.
He does not like it, but he looks adorable.
Hates it. Like, one of the pouches also contains Colaprico handling gloves that are like a full half inch of leather just to put on the sweater.
There's like this whole dance where you wrestle Colaprico into his sweater, and then like 2 minutes later you just hear soft purring and cooing the side as Colaprico falls asleep.
Yes, extremely snug.
And I thought it was extremely important that you all knew that there were sweaters.
Absolutely.
After a day or two of travel and having to deal with Kavos periodically throughout that time, actually, this time I, Selv Astralin, am going to actually approach Kavos and kind of head him off a little bit, because Selv's understanding is that Kavos kind of does these little like ambush talks to kind of assert dominance. And so now Selv has realized that and has decided that that can't continue.
So you approach Kavos.
I'm going to approach Kavos and ambush discussion with him.
Discussion ambush.
Yes.
You appear over his shoulder and Kavos kind of leans back. You see him tilt his shoulder with a little smirk showing all of his fang teeth. And he just says,
"Hey, Astralin, you, yes. What?
I was hoping we could discuss the tournament and some expectations."
For the third time, no. You should have looked it up. You should have shown some respect and come prepared.
I see. You earn respect by doing research. Whereas we earn respect by doing actual, tangible things.
Well, that's not what I would say either. What's so great that you all have been up to?
And he gestures at you and Hody and Colaprico that are also just kind of like marching in lockstep.
Well, for instance, the rumor was the chicken, but it was actually a demonic chicken that we had vanquished not too long ago.
And Selv is going to keep a perfectly straight face of like, this is serious. I am not cracking a joke. There was a demonic chicken within the city walls, and we have vanquished it.
So you're telling me the Golden Tree Guild, the Golden Children of Agmar, they've been defeating ghost chickens, and that's their calling card.
It was large enough to feed a family of 12 for probably a good month.
Well, very generous of you. We, on the other hand, of the Verdant Wave Guild, you know, we've been busy as well, of course. Just a few weeks ago, when we were outside the city, we spelunked the caves of the southern swamps, and he kind of leans in, and ousted the web-footed Wembleys, kidnapping the mudfolk there.
That is very admirable. We did travel to Deepwood and had a very interesting time there. We actually aided the council and saved quite a few of them from an attack from within.
He kind of leans back a little. I did hear about that one. I mean, magic users, there. You hit them once, and usually they're down, so I'm only moderately impressed by that. I mean, you're speaking to the dragon who rode the titan beetle of Canasta, so, like, you know, it's, I think, punching a wizard, riding a titan beetle, yeah, I could see where, in your eyes, that's equivalent, I guess.
You had also mentioned you had done some exploring outside the city, as we have as well. We actually made a trek to the Deadlands. It is named quite aptly.
Well, I personally punched a full dire revenant to re-death who was sicked on me after I also personally punched the necromancer, summoned him to death.
Ah, yes, personal attacks. You will remember that our guild was personally attacked, and myself, actually, by the Mothman.
Oh, okay. Oh, the Mothman again. Yeah, the Golden Tree, they get all the credit for the Mothman. We were two blocks away the whole time. We fought three at the same time. You get a lot of credit for that, because you were just right in the middle of it or whatever, but, like, we were there too.
Yes, I know you were there, and I believe that we would not have been as successful as we were without the help of your guild. It would have taken us possibly a little bit longer to defeat the creature.
Yeah, much longer. You're welcome.
Thank you. This has been most enlightening. Calaprico. Yes, I'll be right there. I must be off. Thank you for the conversation.
And I will stand up and give him a bow, and I will walk away.
Deadland.
And of course, once I get a little bit further away, I'll just be like...
And now, a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Tumblestrom's Tome of Unicorns. This new book by Lucas Anderson offers 10 brand new unicorns and unicorn-themed stat blocks for 5th edition, including the Goopy Oozicorn. the primeval unicorn, and the unicorn of majesty. Each is accompanied with lore and plot hooks to inspire GMs using them for their campaign. There's also a section of unique magic items like the Bow of Fecundity. That's fun to say. Plus, all that is set to super evocative rock and roll zine art. Tumblestrom's Tome of Unicorns is a very flavorful and easy-to-use supplement and can be found right now on the Dungeon Masters Guild. That's TUMBLESTRUM'S, Tome of Unicorns. Available now on the Dungeon Masters Guild.
Hi, everyone. David here with the Midroll. We hope you've been enjoying the episode so far. If you want more of the Reckless Attack crew, come join the community on Discord. The link is in the show notes of the episode and on our website, recklessattack.com. If you want to support the show, head on over to Patreon, where you can get access to our behind-the-screen talkback series, as well as our new series, Reckless a Snack, where we eat snacks and chat about the question of the day. As always, if you like the show, be sure to tell a friend about it too. Thanks so much for listening, and now, back to the episode.
Jonathan, what's something else that happens to this group of travelers on their way?
Nathan, you said mountains of fire, and that got me thinking about something.
Well, I didn't. The map says mountains of fire.
Okay. Because what I'm imagining happening a couple times during this trip up to Kavos' monastery is the caravan is beset by a phenomenon in the weather known as an ember storm. Every so often, the caravan either has to stop and take shelter or just kind of like fight through the inclement weather as from the sky, burning embers just fall on top of the caravan and they have to take care not to like have things catch on fire. Kavos and his cart, he's prepared for this. He knows exactly what to do. Like, this is something that he's seen 1,000 times before, but there might be other people who are traveling that might not have as much experience with this. So like, the first night, someone's tent catches fire, or like some of the animals have to be taken care of to keep their fur from singeing. And like the next night, things get a little bit better, a little bit easier. But these ember storms kind of happen throughout the caravan.
And I'm imagining that's happening more and more as you're approaching.
Yes.
And the runic road, maybe at one point, was able to offer more protection from this and still gives pretty good protection.
Yeah.
But it's still enough. It's like you can see the snow banks on either side of the road, but instead of that, it is ash. And some of it is falling in and catching a few things alight as you travel. These ember storms increase as you get closer. And it's, again, just a few days of travel, but they're long days, but relatively, luckily, uneventful. It occurs to you that it's maybe uneventful because there probably aren't many things that can live in these sorts of environs, because you look around and the trees have started to thin out. What few there are more charcoal than bark, and the ground is filled with a mixture of ash and grass. The final detail that I'll give is the night before, you know you guys are going to make it there. Campfires have been lit. People are settling in. And you see, in the distance, a glow. It is supernaturally bright. It looks almost like a miniature sunset. There is just this orange glow in the distance that you know is vaguely the direction you are heading.
I'm going to take a look over at Kavos. Is he like staring at it or, you know, or giving it any particular more attention than he has other things?
Kavos is leaning back on the cart, kind of lounging, and is looking directly at you, seeing that you are looking in that direction. And he says,
"Incredible, isn't it? My home. You can see it for miles."
"It is quite impressive."
"It is a beacon of excellence. One that all should follow. And you will get to see that tomorrow."
"I look forward to it."
I'll ask you all again, what happens on this several day journey?
Self, you are sitting.
Everything's always happening to Self.
I mean, we can go back to Kaskar in the city. That's fine.
Hody.
Hody's having no thoughts, only good vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Selv, you are traveling in the caravan. And across from you, you see a older, kind of like half dog, half man creature. One of the beast folk. And he's wearing these flowing yellow robes. They are yellow and green in the style of his monastery. And you can tell his age because, much like other beast folk of his kind, his face is like totally white, with like the snout and the jowls and everything is totally white, and then the normal gray coloring of his fur around the rest of his head. He looks up at you and says, "Ugh, these trips always take so long. You, would you like to play a game or something? I know chess."
"Yes, it would be my pleasure."
"Oh.
And do they make a move to take out a board?"
"Yeah."
"Or..." "Oh, okay. Okay."
And his, like, you know, little dog ears perk up when they notice your excitement. It's like, "Oh, you play the statues. You play the game."
"I do, yes. I am most familiar with the dragon chess rules, but if there was some variant you would rather play, I am always open to learning more games."
"Oh, no, no. Dragon chess is fine. I can be accommodating." And he pulls out this board and kind of like sets it up against the rocky, you know, the rocking of the caravan and the wagon as we travel.
And then Selv will take two of the footman pieces, one in the darker color, one in the lighter color, put them behind his back, mix them around in his hand, and then hold his hands out to this beast person.
Mm-hmm.
To select a hand.
"Ha! It seems I found a worthy adversary this time." And he points to the hand on the left.
Open up my hand, and it's the white footman. So they are white, and they go first.
"Ah! It seems that wisdom does truly come with age." And he's going to take this and kind of set everything up and kind of make his first move. "So, young one, who taught you to play this game? It's not every day I meet someone so enthusiastic about the statues."
"It was actually a master at my monastery. They thought that it gave a good perspective into tactics. Actually being in charge of a group that sometimes sacrifices must be made in order for the battle to be won."
"Sure, sure. Yes, common war tactics, of course. What monastery did you say you were from?"
"Oh, I didn't, but it is the Bingzhuzi Monastery." "And yourself, where are you from?"
And instead of giving you an answer, he says, "Oh, the Bingzhuzi Monastery." And he kind of like, he's about to set down a piece and instead waits a moment and says, "Perhaps this isn't the right kind of game for you. I feel bad kicking someone when they're down. I mean, the Bingzhuzi Monastery has fallen out of favor, from what I've heard, at least."
So Selv gets a kind of a puzzled look and says,
"Oh, how so?"
"Well, I just mean no one would dare attack a powerful monastery. A monastery that has maintained its pride and honor, and, well, clearly the Bing Zhuzi Monastery lacks some of that.
When you are playing dragon chess against an opponent, do you want them to be better than you to give you a challenge, or do you want it to be a easy victory?
Of course I want a challenge. I just don't know if I'll get that here.
Well, perhaps the folks who attacked the monastery also wanted a challenge.
Perhaps.
Have you heard what happened to them?
No, I haven't.
Interesting.
And then Selv will just basically wait for them to finish their move and take their hand off of whatever piece they were moving.
He considers this a while, and the game continues. He plays, you play, and all of a sudden the wagon that the two of you are on rolls over a large bump, and the pieces, the pawns, scatter across the floor. And the old man says, "Perhaps there's more to you than I thought, young Dragonborn. And perhaps a moving wagon is not the best place to play a game of chess."
Indeed.
And the dog man bows. Jaxreel of the Hidden Step Clan.
So, Nathan, I have another thing for you that I want to happen on this trip to the Mountains of Fire.
Okay. Lay it on me, Jonathan.
Cool. So, what I'm imagining is that it's a toasty evening, and we've all kind of gathered around a communal fire just to kind of eat dinner, tell stories, and just generally have, you know, a classic campfire night.
Yeah, not too close to the fire, because it is very hot, are going towards Mountains of Fire.
Yeah.
It is more for light than for heat.
Exactly. Selv, you find that someone is approaching you. This is a tall, slender person, actually kind of similar in build to you. They look like a dragonborn-ish kind of individual, in that they have this sort of like lizard-like head alongside a set of robes that twist all the way around their body. And just looking at the robes, you notice that it's not made of cloth, but it looks like it's more made of scales. And they approach you. I'm imagining you're just sitting down somewhere.
Actually walking, or like, is there some kind of snake-like?
No, slur? they are walking. They are humanoid.
Okay.
But they walk towards you, and you hear them say, "Is this seat taken?"
"No, be my guest."
"Thank you." And they sit down and introduce themselves. "My name is Kimberly. I'm one of the contestants here tonight." "Yourself, right? Selv Astralin?"
Yes, I am."
"It's so nice to meet you." And looking a little bit closer, they do have sort of this androgynous feel about them. And if you ask, their pronouns are they, them. And they sit down next to you. And they just kind of like clench their stomach a little bit as they sit down. Like, "Ugh, sorry. I'm not really feeling that well tonight. Must have been something that I ate. But I hope it won't stop us from enjoying this wonderful evening together."
So Selv kind of like reaches down and flips open his bag and pulls out a couple of leaves and says,
"You may want to try chewing on these. It's mint. It might help settle things."
"You're so thoughtful, Selv. Thank you. But that's not really what I'm here for. I guess I wanted to learn a little bit more about you. I heard about you from my good friend Kavos."
"Oh.
He has a lot to say about you, Selv."
"I'm sure he does. Well, as you can see, most of those rumors are not true."
"I'm assuming that Kavos has basically been making fun of me."
"Yeah, I thought I was like, I saw that you weren't a 3-foot-tall gnome."
"Yeah, yeah. Yes. I thought you were. I see you're not like a puny little lizard boy.
I see that you got that overbite fixed."
"Yeah.
You've grown out of your dragonborn acne."
"Yeah."
"Yes."
And at that, they chuckle and just say, "Yes, Kavos does have a way with words sometimes. Is this your first tournament?"
This is my first of these tournaments outside of my own monastery. Nothing that has encompassed other fighters or other traditions.
And you can tell they're kind of like sizing you up a little bit here. Really? How did you do?
I did my best.
All of a sudden, you see stumbling in from the campfire a short, 3 foot tall halfling with a pompadour. Hey, Kimberly, that's where you ran off to. What are you doing all the way over here by yourself and this guy? You don't look so tough. What are you doing in this tournament? I don't really care. Kimberly, come on back. What are you doing by yourself? I mean, I thought we were enjoying a nice time by the fire, you know, getting cozy.
I'm sorry. What was your name again?
What do you mean? You forgot my name already, baby? My name's Edgarius. It's going to be the talk of the town as soon as we get to the tournament. Everyone's going to be screaming the name. Edgarius. Edgarius.
That is very specific.
Yeah, because it's my name, and it's the best.
Selv, I'd like you to meet my acquaintance, Edgarius. Edgarius, this is Selv Astralin. He and I were just having a nice, lovely conversation by the fire before you decided to join us.
Yeah, and you're welcome. What are you guys doing here?
We were just getting ready to go up and dance, actually. The music is lovely tonight, and I was really looking for a partner, so... Sel, why don't you and I get on our way?
Yes, of course, it would be my pleasure. Are you familiar with the Owlbear Twist?
Of course, that's one of my favorites.
Only nerds do the Owlbear Twist!
Thank you for your opinion, Edgarius. Now, if you don't mind, Sel and I were just leaving. And Kimberly, like, pointedly takes Sel's arm and turns away from you, Edgarius.
Mm-hmm.
And the two of them kind of walk over to a place closer to the fire, near the music, and start doing the owlbear twist.
Are you ready for this?
Don't be like that, baby!
Twist.
Suddenly, Edgarius finds that the hem of his pants are on fire. And he...
oh, God! Oh, no! My fashionable pants! My favorite pair!
And Selv and I dance into the night.
The next day, after some hours of travel, you start to really notice the temperature is noticeably up. All around you, you see more ash, more dead things, and mountains. I don't know how many mountains you've crossed in your particular journey, but you are very familiar with mountains, having grown up on some.
Yes.
These are all volcanic mountains. Lots of craters, lots of dark gray, ashy ground. And in front of you, dominating the skyline, is a giant volcano. As tall as any mountain that you have seen, that you have lived on, that you have read about. And you can see at the top of its crater, billowing down, is a huge lava fall. And you see that the road you are following heads straight towards it. You walk in the direction of this. Not to sound like a late 2000s, early 2010s sea movie, but an ultra volcano. And there, at its base, you can see it in the distance. A relatively small collection of buildings. Not particularly tall, but definitely beautiful in their architecture. It seems to be one large building surrounded by several other smaller ones. And something that strikes you as surprising is that there are no walls to this abbey. Instead, Surrounding it, like a moat, is lava. As you continue forward, your feet start to make a strange sound as your shoes and the wagon wheels and walking staves and all of that click against an entirely obsidian bridge that stretches over what must be 40, 60 feet of hot lava. And in front of you is a relatively modest town, completely made of stone. At the center of it all is this grand building. Very boxy, but still very beautiful. And you see on the far side a giant tower that has a bell inside of it. And standing in front of this tower, welcoming you all, is an elven woman who looks at you all in a measured way. Before she can say anything, Kavos jumps down and delivers a deep bow to this person and then turns to the side. This elven woman steps forward and says, "Greetings, travelers. I am Abbot Augusta, and welcome to Semaphore Abbey. Those of you who are participating in our Tournament of Champions have arrived just in time." And cartoonishly, the giant bell in the bell tower in the distance starts ringing. And it is this very strange sound that is unlike any bell you've ever heard before. And what happens next, it almost happens in slow motion for yourself. The bell rings, and you see Kavos turn his head and look at you, and his mouth curves into a cruel smile over his dragonborn teeth as the abbot says, "The tournament is beginning now. Good luck." I think that's where we'll end this week's episode, everybody. Woo. See you all next week for Tournament R.
Hey.
Bye.
Really care. Kimberly, come on back. What are you doing by yourself? I mean, I thought we were enjoying a nice time by the fire, you know, getting cozy.
I hate this. I'm uncomfortable.
Okay.
That means I am uncomfortable, but in a way that I am pretty into.
So like it's
good content.
It's not an X, but okay. Like I've been on the receiving end of this too many times.
Oh, it's just hitting too close.
It's just hitting too close.
You're saying David has done this to
you? He has experience with this. Let me
tell you about how we first met. Yeah. All
right. Let me tell about our long courtship process.
As I sidled up to Sophie and said,
hey,
you come here at your place of
work. I thought we were having a nice time over by the fire.
If I could rearrange the alphabet, I'd put you and I together.